Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Profit Playbook Podcast. In this show, we discuss entrepreneurship, digital marketing, and how to grow a profitable online business with some of the best minds in the space. I'm your host, Tyler Narducci. I broke free of the 9-to-5 rat race back in 2015 by starting my own digital marketing agency and have since scaled it up to multiple 7 figures. Today, I run a consulting firm helping marketing agencies and B2B business owners rapidly scale their online businesses through our 100% done-for-you leads and sales program. We do this by fully automating your lead generation, sales, and client fulfillment. If you're interested in taking your agency or B2B business to the next level, then apply now at www.profitpeak.co. That's www.profitpeak.co. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. Now, let's dive into today's episode. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Profit Playbook Podcast. I am your host, Tyler Narducci, and today I have with me Richard Parker. Richard has been helping people achieve their dreams of owning a business for over 30 years. His How to Buy a Good Business at a Great Price program has sold over 100,000 times in more than 80 countries. He was hired by the Dalio family office for several years and worked as a mentor to one of Ray Dalio's sons, teaching him the art of buying small businesses. He has personally purchased 13 of his own companies, plus one co-investment with purchase prices ranging from $50,000 to over $200 million. Richard has appeared in Forbes, The New York Times, TheStreet.com, Entrepreneur Magazine, Inc.com, and has over 200 published articles to his credit. Richard, that's quite a background you got there. I'm very happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me, and hopefully I'll be able to live up to the wonderful bloated introduction and hopefully not disappoint anybody.
Absolutely. I have a hard time believing with that type of background that this is going to be anything less than a spectacular show. So we'll just dive right in. My first question to you is really, you know, how did you get started buying businesses, and then what eventually inspired you to start your program to teach other people how to buy businesses?
Okay. So, and again, thank you for having me. I was working for a company in Canada. I was in my late 20s and I was making a good living. I was in my late 20s making $72,000 a year, which was pretty good income at that point in time. The company was growing like crazy. I was in a job probably way above my head, but we were growing so fast. The company was just trying to plug in personnel as quickly as they could. And then I did something absolutely insane, which is I bought a stock on margin. Someone told me about buying stocks on margin where you could put up half the money and reap twice the stocks, and painted this wonderful picture about how when the stock goes up and you sell the stock, you could pay back the money that you borrowed, and everything sounds terrific except for one thing, right? It all sounds great.
Just like that,
like they say on Sex in the City, right? And just like that. And then what happens if the stock goes down? And the stock absolutely shit the bed. I lost everything. I lost $60,000. Excuse me. I was 29 years old. I was my first child on the way. And I was, it was just a mess, Tyler. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was just faced with a choice. Like, I didn't think that I could earn enough money in a regular job, even though I love my job. But I, you know, thought, do I try to change jobs? And I knew I couldn't get anything that would pay me a lot more. I mean, I was overpaid as it was for my skill set at that point. And, you know, what were my options? And really, outside of buying lotto tickets or going to Las Vegas, I said my only option, I had a few bucks left. And again, I'd lost $60,000, and my only option is to get into something where I don't have a ceiling on my income. And as I started to reflect upon that, saying my only options are to be in my own business. And there's sort of two drop downs to that. One of them is starting a business, and the other one is buying an existing business. And with a startup, I mean, everything is blue sky. Everything that sounds wonderful, but you don't know what the hell you're getting, and if it's even going to turn into something successful. And I'm glad, you know, all these years later, I look back and say, you know, a startup would have been a horrific idea, but I realize I've got to buy an existing business where I could start taking out an income right away. And so I did something in a similar industry to what I was in, but one that focused on mostly on my strengths, which was as dealing with retailers and sales and marketing and what have you. And so I bought that business out of complete necessity, and realized shortly thereafter that growing a business organically is a hell of a lot more difficult than growing a business through some acquisitions. And so I started buying companies to add on to my companies. Again, I was working with a very tight budget, if no budget also. I had to get ridiculously creative in some of these acquisitions. And, you know, one particular acquisition, convincing the owner to come on board and throw their lot in with mine. And we sort of merged the companies, started something, relationship, but it wasn't by no means a new business. It was an existing business. And that was a business, again, I could have never afforded on my own. I ended up costing me about $100,000, which was a ridiculous stretch. The business was worth a lot more, but we ended up building that into a $4.5 million business. And, sort of told you about these, don't get me wrong, I had a few later on that were some horrible failures, which, it's not all wonderful, but I've bought, since then 13 companies, one co-investment, made a lot of mistakes along the way, bought some companies that really, really didn't work out. But to your second question about how the program came about, it was the result of an acquisition that I decided not to do. One thing I've learned over my career, some of the best deals are the ones you don't do, right? And what happened was I was looking at a company in South Florida. It was a commercial laundry equipment distributor. They distributed the commercial equipment of Maytag. So they sold to coin laundries, dormitories, condominiums, hotels, anything with big washing facilities. And there was a number of components to the business. One was just the pure sales of the equipment. The other one was the repairs and maintenance and a parts department. And the third one, which the owner had, which was he actually had some machines and some facilities that he would do revenue share with. So it was people would in a dormitory would spend their $1 or $2 or whatever it was for washing and drying. And then he split the revenue with the facility. And so there's three different entities. He wasn't selling the revenue sharing business, but there were three different entities. And at that point, I had purchased probably about 8 or 9 companies. And I looked at this transaction and we had the offer was agreed to. Everything was in place. I was in my formalized due diligence. And as I was looking at this business, there wasn't necessarily fraud going on, but there was a ridiculous amount of commingling. They were taking from one company. If one company was short of money, they would put it into the other company. If one company had excess capital and they needed to pay for certain equipment, they bought it from the other company. So it wasn't fraud. I'm not, suggesting that there was fraudulent going on, but it was just so much commingling that I couldn't figure it out. The only thing I could figure out is that I couldn't figure it out. The whole thing looked like a plate of spaghetti. And so I backed away from the deal. And this was in Broward County, Florida. And I remember walking out into the parking lot. And for your list of Broward County, where Fort Lauderdale is. And I walked into the parking lot and I remember thinking to myself, the average schmuck would have bought that business. And it's not because I'm smart. It's only because I did it so many times that I recognized that this is not a doable deal, that this, I could never get to the bottom of it. And because I couldn't get to the bottom of it, I ultimately would never know what I'm getting. And so I backed out of the deal and that caused me to become incredibly interested in this whole field about business acquisitions at the lower market for individuals, not companies with hundreds of million dollars buying companies. What is the average person who wants to change their life, better their life, improve their income, and give themselves an opportunity at entrepreneurship? What do they do when they want to buy a business? Because I had the history convinced that based on my own experience that buying an existing business is the way to go. And so I spent the next year doing research. I was lucky I was in a financial position to be able to do that. And I spoke with hundreds of business brokers, business buyers, aspiring buyers, failed buyers, accountants, attorneys, lenders, and trying to figure out what do people do? Because this is nothing like buying a house. I mean, this is something that, unlike anything you've ever done before. And everything came back to the fact that there's no good resources. I mean, there's some books, The Idiot's Guide or The Dummy's Guide to Buying a Business, which, doesn't get you very far, or textbooks written for Harvard MBAs, which are not applicable to Main Street USA or anything in between, and realize that, there's really no resources for individuals. And that was in the early days of the internet. And it's actually only gotten worse since then. And so I decided that I wanted, because of so much misinformation and generic information. And so at that point in time, I said, I looked at hundreds of companies. I'm going to accumulate all those files into a guide. I'd taken incredible notes in every deal. I did this. They did that. Here's what I'm planning on doing. This is what happened. Here's the outcome. This failed. I did that. And so my notes were incredible. And I decided to aggregate all of them. And I really felt that I was doing this from a standpoint. I just wanted to memorialize my life's work at that point, even though I was a pretty young guy. I'm an old fart now, but even though I was pretty young at the time, I said, I would like to memorialize that and see how this can help someone. And the day before we launched the product, now we've been online for over two decades, Well, my wife asked me, how many think you're going to sell? And my answer to her then was same as it is now, which is, you know, if I could help one person buy the right business or avoid buying the wrong one, it will have been worth all the effort. And my whole goal behind all of this was to teach people what they need to know, how to do it, what to do and how to do it, and to hold their hand. I said, I'll make myself available. People email me still all the time. I never even charge them because I just want to help people. And here we are all these years later. The materials are constantly updated, of course. We've sold over 100,000 of these to 80 in over 80 countries, helped tens of thousands of people buy businesses. So it's ridiculous. Like, I never even thought this was going to buy, like, turn into a business, let alone something crazy like this, but it's beautiful. I mean, we help so many people and we do it so reasonably and don't do it. And, you know, part is I've never done this for the money. And I think that is an underpinning probably to some of the success, because everything we've always done has always been with the, you know, the target of helping, and the money has just followed. So I apologize for my long-winded answer, but you wanted to know how this course was developed. So now you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And I think the reason, one of the main reasons probably behind its success is you're right. There's a huge, just massive void of information out there on how to buy a business. And I think it's because it's not like what you said, it's not like buying a house. It's not, there's not strict steps that you need to follow. You can, you know, haphazardly go and do, you know, a bad deal that you don't know what you're doing, or you could have, you know, a plan, a strategy and check marks. And, you know, if it doesn't meet this certain standard, then I'm not going to move forward, and you can do it that way. Right. But there's no like industry standard. There's no like, this Correct. Is the path that you should follow. And so there's just so much confusion out there. And I think a lot of people agree with you that, you know, starting and growing a business is a riskier deal than finding a good stable business that's already making money. But going the path of buying the business is just so mysterious for so many people, which right. is why I thought that, you know, it'd be great to have you on this show, because our audience is a lot of digital marketing agency owners and people in the digital marketing field. And a lot of them, you know, myself included, have, you know, thought about selling our business at one point or another, right? Adding on to our business portfolio and getting more businesses as well. So I'm, you know, I'm happy to have you here so you can kind of shed some light on this industry that, you know, or this, you know, process really
right,
that
right.
not a lot of people bring clarity to. So what are some key principles that you teach for prospective business buyers?
So I think a lot of the principles that we teach actually dovetail very well in your previous comment, which is the standardization. And what happens in this industry, when the higher the value of the deal, when you start getting institutional investors, you know, the Wall Street guys and gals of the world, obviously the standardization becomes more cohesive. But on the lower market, where you and I play, and your colleagues play, and individuals, aspiring entrepreneurs play, there's no standardization. And so when you look at this whole thing, and someone faced with it, and they say, oh, shit, you know, like, there's like a lot to do. And the more they, and like every question they ask begets more questions. So it becomes more confusing if you're not on a path. And so there is a standardization. Challenges that at the lower market, the stakeholders, the players don't follow it. The sellers don't follow it. The brokers don't follow it. So my principles lays out that standardization, because there are 23 steps in this process, 20 really, there's some post-purchase steps, but 20 steps in the process. And the success lies in understanding that buying a business is not difficult, but it's complex. And there's moving parts. And when you look at it, said earlier, as a whole, it's like, oh my God, there's a lot here. So you have to reduce it to bite-sized pieces. And I can assure anybody, and I mean anybody, that just needs only the interest or desire to do this, it is doable. Make no mistake. This is absolutely doable. We're not talking about sending men to the moon here. This is, all of the steps are easy to manage if you put them into bite-sized pieces. And so that's why we take people through the principles of, the first thing is understanding why you're buying a business and what to consider, because you have to consider your family, what their interests are, your lifestyle, what you want to achieve, and certain things that are restrictive or certain things you want to maintain. Then critically important is getting your head around this idea of what type of business is right for you. That is the foundation to everything. Because if there's 20 steps in the process and you do a half-assed job at 19 of them, But you buy the right business for you, by and large, you're going to be very successful. Similarly, if you do the other 19 steps, 10 out of 10, and you buy the business that's wrong for you, you're going out of business within a year, I guarantee it. And so we really spend a lot of time getting people to understand how to identify a business that's right for them. Because most people just jump into the process. They start looking at publicly listed businesses for sale. They start sending inquiries. They have no idea what they're talking about. They don't even get answers. And they spend, you know, so they look at one business after another, trying to figure out which, if any, is right for them. And the opposite is the way you're supposed to go about doing this. First, you have to figure out what type of business is right for you. Then I can assure you that it's easy to find and buy it and then go through the various steps. But that's the underpinning. That's everything, the platform. And then we go through understanding how you deal with business brokers, because it's a very different world than dealing with real estate brokers, how you'll deal with the negotiation, the valuation, and of course, where to look, putting your questions together for the sellers, what answers to look for, questions that they're going to ask you, how to investigate, because your due diligence has to begin immediately, investigating the industry, the competition, the sales, the marketing. The financial piece, by the way, Tyler, because I'm sure it'll be a subsequent question or one point, like the financial piece is the easiest. Like numbers are numbers. Numbers don't lie. People lie. So the valuation, even though there's 50 points that you have to examine to come up with a valuation, which we've actually automated that whole thing for people. But numbers are numbers. Numbers don't lie. People lie. It's math. It is or it isn't. And so that is actually the easiest part of the investigative process. And then you have, you know, that's one prong in the spokes of due diligence. And then it's, you know, closing the transaction. And away you go. So, you know, the principles are really, we teach people what they need to know, what to do, and how to do it for each of those stages we talked about, from the right business right through to closing, including negotiation, valuation, and the investigation.
So the financials are the easy part, which a lot of people probably think are the opposite. They think that's probably the hard part in getting to that answer. So if that is the easy part, what are some of the big common challenges that they actually find in the process?
So common part, and again, when we talk about the numbers are the easy part because it's math, right? And sometimes mm-hmm. people, you know, there could be issues of cooking the books or the numbers don't work out. But again, it's still very easy to figure out because it is binary. And unlike right. other parts, which are, you know, more artistic versus scientific. So the challenges are, of course, the right identifying the type of business that's right for you. And we teach people exactly how to do that in a methodical way, because you start up like a hopper. It's a lot at the top, because you're looking at a lot of different types of business and making a lot of consideration for yourself, and you squeeze it down. So you go from like a shotgun to a laser beam. So that part, while it is challenging, if you do it as we lay out, you get to the understanding of what type of business is right for you. The negotiation causes a lot of heartburn for people. Just because they haven't done it before. They may be a little intimidated. Some people hand it over to their attorney to do, which is like the worst thing that you could do. It's like giving a three-year-old a book of matches.
When you say negotiation, I mean, are you encouraging people to like negotiate the price down from whatever the business was listed at, or what exactly are they negotiating?
Okay, so great question. So the first thing related to the asking price, I pay no attention to the asking price. Zero. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Sometimes I just look at it just to think what the seller is thinking. But the asking price of the business the first thing is what a seller and business owner thinks their business is worth has nothing to do with the value, number one. And I come up with a value based on my criteria, not theirs. So that's great. But I pay absolutely no attention to it whatsoever. I couldn't care less. The negotiation, and that doesn't mean I may end up paying a price close to that. I'm not saying that I discount it because I'm going to pay
half. How often is it way off?
90% of the time.
I figured. Okay. And it's always way over, I'm sure.
Of course.
It's their baby. They build it.
Yeah, so of course. No, yeah. I get it. Yeah. I get it. They put blood, sweat, tears, and beers into it. And so it's something that, you know, and they typically don't understand how to do a valuation, or they bring in a broker as an inflated price or whatever the case may be. But the connection, there's like seller's idea of value, actual value of the business, they don't usually don't conjugate. Right?
Yeah.
So that's why I just completely discount them. And the only times, you know, sometimes if it's a shitty little distressed business, they but you don't want to buy those. So we won't even talk about those. So the negotiation, there's the first part is if we're talking about the, related to the price of the business, you have to come up with a concrete, valuation has been referred to a combination of art and science. Some people believe it's more artistic. I believe that it can be made scientific. I've made it scientific in probably 90% of the valuation that I do can be made scientific because I assess 50 specific components of the business, weigh them, and that's what we have. We provide that to people in our course, which you answer these questions, they're assigned a specific weight, that gets married to the profits of the business, and it determines a multiple or a valuation purchase price or target purchase price. But there's also issues related to transition, key employees that are going to stay. What about, you get into the discussion, you have a customer concentration issue where a disproportionate amount of business resides with too few customers, so you may have to negotiate a performance clause in the contract. There's leases that have to be negotiated potentially, and all these things. So there's a myriad of things that have to be negotiated. And the reality is people get such angst and heartburn over it. And I tell people, you know what, have the conversation. This should not be confrontational. The buyer, the one thing also is, there's this concept of win-win, and that sounds great in a personal relationship. I want my relationship with my wife and my kids to be win-win, and my friends to be win-win if and whenever there's an issue. But when you're buying a business, the buyer assumes almost all the risk, even if there's a seller note. Buyer assumes almost all the risk. So the reality is, the buyer should win and the seller should be reasonably happy. But win-win is impossible, right? It's impossible.
That's a good, yeah.
And you shouldn't be shooting for that. So I think people have to first remove that idea of like, I'm going to insult them. It's okay, go ahead and insult them. Big deal, they'll recover. Especially if there's a broker involved, let them deliver the bad news. But all of these points, the bigger point or the overarching theme is have the conversation about all the points. And you don't have to win everyone. You don't have to win every battle. You don't have to be argumentative. Don't draw lines in the sand. Don't keep identifying these things as deal breakers. Don't treat incidents as catastrophes. All of these type of issues, it should be a conversation. If I'm looking to buy your business, Tyler, I'm not coming in there like a ball of fire, guns a-blazing in our first conversation and tell you you're nuts related to your asking price or here's what I'm going to. No, I want to get to know you. I want to understand how you think. We want to have a conversation because we can work things through. And as it relates to the valuation, that can sometimes become difficult. But if you have a defensible valuation, and a seller, one thing someone asked me recently, and I wrote an article on it not long ago, how do sellers come up with their asking price? I said, they put on a blindfold and they throw darts. But if you can, right? But if you have a defensible valuation, you have a much better position than they.
Right. You have a formula and you're transparent about the formula. Here is how I got, you're not just pitching a price. You're saying, this is exactly how I got to this formula. If you feel that anything in here is wrong, or that it should be higher because I got a formula part wrong, then let me know. So you're coming in and giving them,
what they should have done.
The strategy. Exactly. Exactly. It's very defensible. Hard for them to challenge that because it's math.
It's math. And if it is challenged and they do have a point, then you adjust accordingly because you want to get to something that makes sense. And you don't want to walk away from a deal from a small amount of money. Yeah, there is a give and take and there's a lot more than just that piece of it. And sometimes, it's like, okay, I'll accept your price. You take my terms.
Yeah.
Because the value could be in the terms, right? And you're getting, seller notes or earnouts or performance-based contracts, those type of things. So the whole key is, getting these points that cause pain are not really painful if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And if you prepare and educate yourself. So there aren't really a lot of pain points. People get a little intimidated, but I can assure you when people acquire the knowledge gives you confidence. The confidence gives you the ability to go out and have these conversations.
So in your course, I'm sure you have a whole section probably in the beginning about how to find the business that's right for you. First stop, right? You don't want to go buy a business that you have no interest in actually owning and running because that's a disaster, even if it is a successful business, if it's not a good fit for you. So once we're past that and you found the business model that you're actually looking for, one of the biggest, questions a lot of people have in this space is where do I find it? Because there are sites out there that you can find it. There are, brokers, you go get a broker? Do you go find your own deal off the market so there's no competition? Where do you suggest people, once they know the type of business they want to buy, where do they go to look for it?
All of the above plus. So This is deal flow at every level is a challenge. Whether you're an individual looking to buy a small business on Main Street for $50,000 or you're a private equity firm looking to buy billion-dollar companies, deal flow is a challenge pervasive through the industry. And so the way you attack this is not singularly. You put out all your tentacles. So the business, the generic business for sale websites that you alluded to first are a first place to start because they're accessible. Now, keep in mind, most of those sites are controlled by business broker listings. Business brokers only sell 10% of all businesses, and 75% of the businesses listed on those websites don't sell. However, It's a perfect laboratory, and that's the way it should be treated, because you have the ability on those websites to immediately pick out some categories that you think make sense for your skill set. For example, I'm interested, you know, based on my skill set, I think I should buy a durable medical equipment company, or I should buy a distributor of beverages, or maybe it could also work for a restaurant, or it could work for owning a a transportation company. I mean, let's call them four random categories. Well, you take four random categories and you pick out five potential businesses that, even if they have anything of interest to you at the beginning, you pursue them initially, and then you have four categories, five sellers. Now you have a laboratory sample of 20, and you could go meet with 20 sellers, and you can find out what's involved with running that business. What do you do every day? What keeps you up at night about the business? What is the ideal candidate to run this business? What are the network and capital requirements of this business? How do I grow this business? Who are the competitors? I mean, on and on and on the list goes, but you have this laboratory, because that's what you want to be able to have the research. As you narrow that down, then you have to, and at the same time, you have to look at every avenue. So you want to network with attorneys, accountants, and financial planners. You want to put feelers out to as many business brokers as possible so that they are aware of the type of business that you want to purchase. Now, let's say you go through all of that and you don't find one. That exercise, those exercises will put you in a position to get a much greater understanding of the exact type of business that is right for you. With that, you could do direct solicitations. You acquire a list, you do a direct solicitation to businesses in the geographical area that you were considering. We have a solicitation template that people have used. We've had a wide range of success. We've had people that sent these out and got like zero, and we have other ones that have had a 40% response rate. Now we do
have- These solicitations are to business owners that weren't necessarily thinking of selling, like yes. Saying, hey, you know, I like your business. Are you interested in selling?
Yes, because in my theory is every business is for sale. Some sellers just don't know it. And so Once you understand, and aspiring entrepreneurs need to get into the habit of being intellectually curious about business. I'm doing this for 34 years. And it drives my wife bonkers. Every business that I go into, like if the owner's there or I find the owner, I could sit there and have a half an hour conversation with the owner, because I just find it intriguing. And it's wild how many businesses that I found or leads as a result of speaking to someone who owned a local dry cleaner, and he has a buddy in a distribution business that may want to sell and hired me to be their representative. Or I ended up finding it for someone and looking to acquire it myself. And I also learn things along the way. When you speak to business owner, what are your challenges? What do you like about it? If you have to do it all over again, would you buy this business? And so reaching out with those tentacles as well is really, really, really helpful. As I'm telling the story, I'm laughing because I went into a florist shop. I was in Australia with my wife and late father-in-law, and I had to go buy flowers. We were going to visit my late father-in-law's former assistant. We were going to her house, and Frank, my late father-in-law, said, just go in and let's get her some flowers before we go over there. So I said, okay, fine. I parked the car, even though I was driving on the wrong side of the road. But I went inside to the florist shop, and I come out like 45 minutes later. And my father-in-law said, what the hell were you doing? He said, let me guess. You know the guy's whole life story and how they bought the business. And you got me. Yes, that's exactly it. But if you develop that intellectual curiosity, you're going to learn things at every stop, and you'll be surprised where some of these leads to find a business come from. So, you know, you've got to do everything, throw a lot of it at the wall, but there's a place to start through the generic sites.
Now it almost sounds like the solicitation piece might be a preferred route to find, because now you don't have any competition. You don't, as like on those sites, you have a million people trying to offer
more.
trying to go in and I would imagine, and please, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of those people that are listing businesses on those sites, they're trying to offload a business that's not working for them for whatever reason, right? It's not like this is a golden business that they're just retiring and you know what I mean? Like those are the really great ones that you want to find, but those probably aren't the ones on those websites. The ones that, you know, are doing, are profitable and doing well are probably going to be the off market ones that you have to solicit. And now you're talking to a profitable business and you don't have any competition. So that to me logically sounds like a preferred route to go. Is that on track or no?
Well, it's 100% on track because the first point is there's a lot of shitty little businesses on those websites, and the direct solicitation is ultimately and very often the way to go. I mean, if you get lucky and you find one online and it's good or it leads to something else, great. But the goal and the use of those is a direct solicitation only works when it's highly targeted. So if Tyler, if you were starting out looking to buy a business today and said, well, you know what, based on our conversation, you're going to do a direct solicitation. Okay. So who? Who are you going to send the letter to? What are you going to send out? You know, there's 33 million businesses in the United States. You're going to send out 33 million letters? You won't do that. And so you would say to yourself, well, I got to get it a little targeted. So how do I get it targeted and what should I put in the letter? And in the letter, you want to be able to outline some criteria that you're looking for, not overwhelming, just a few of them because you want to make it, you want to get the conversation going, but you want to be
meaning
targeted.
Like revenue over,
yeah, I'm looking
like
for
margins
businesses.
Above.
Exactly. You're very smart. Exactly. I'm looking for businesses with revenue of X or so many employees or you're 12 years in business or whatever the criteria, just a very few bullet points that are absolute musts for you that are not too many that businesses won't meet, but at the same time are enough that you could rule out the garbage. And you make them targeted because once you go through the process of we talked about earlier, going through the business, generic business for wealth, sell websites, speaking to business brokers, speaking to business owners, speaking to attorneys and accountants and getting leads. Once you've been able to look at a bunch of different businesses, then you say, aha, okay, I know I should, my skill set is best married. And we could talk about this in a second, how important it is. My skill set is best married to a distributor in the food business. Well, then you could do a targeted solicitation to distributors in the food business. Until you get to that, even if you think you want to be in the food business, you don't know what area of it. So better off that you narrow it down, and then the direct solicitations work unbelievably. And one thing, I'll give you some secret sauce for all your listeners. One thing that we've done over the years, you get your lawyer to send out the letter.
If you send out the letter. It just looks more official, feels more official.
Well, everybody opens a lawyer's letter.
Oh, right.
Right. Everybody opens a lawyer's letter, and business brokers are sending out like a gazillion letters across the world all the time. I have a buyer for your business. I'd like to speak to you about it. And, you know, the market is very ripe for buyers, et cetera, just to promote people to sellers to call them. It's bullshit for the most part. They don't have a buyer. They just want a listing. So business owners get them probably letters every day. And so if you send out a letter from your lawyer stationery, you know, and you can indicate that we have a template in there that's had unbelievable results in our course. If you get the lawyer to send this template letter and people get a letter and they see the envelope, it's from a lawyer. They're opening it up. You're not asking the lawyer to do the work, but they start the engagement and it works beautifully.
Have you primarily purchased brick and mortar businesses or have you purchased online businesses as well?
I've purchased primarily brick and mortar businesses. One business that I purchased which did legal document preparation work for pro se litigants. A pro se litigant is someone who is going to represent themselves in court. That had a very significant online component to it, but it was a brick and mortar business.
Okay. And is that just a personal preference thing? Does that go back to what you said before? The best business for you would be brick and mortar, but that doesn't necessarily mean that other people isn't not better for online.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, okay. It depends on your skill set. You know, Dioma, where we sell the course, is entirely an online business. I like the social engagement of a business with employees and customers, and you know, and maybe you'll accuse me of talking too much, but I really like, you know, I like the social aspect of business, like in the business itself. But I enjoy really engaging with people and meetings and what have you. And the online business just a little too lonely for me. Our business, our courses are all sold online. Orders come in. You know, and I love it when people send me emails because I encourage people to email me and I'm happy to answer their questions and I never charge them. But it's just a personal choice for me. I'm much more social and I love this type of interaction on a daily basis with everybody involved, employees, customers, suppliers. You know, I just enjoy that more.
Yeah. And the reason I ask is because myself and my listeners were primarily digital marketing agency owners, and our businesses are typically online. All of our clients are online, right. our contractors, our employees, everybody's online. You know, it's a strange thing. I've had my agency since 2015. So we're going on 9 years now. And I have only met like two people
crazy.
That I've employed over the years. And
that you employed.
Know Yeah,
that's
I've only
crazy.
Met in person like two people, and it was by happened chance. Like it was like we were at a similar event in a city at the same time. We happened to bump into each other. And they're like, "Oh my god, you know, I see you on Zoom every week, but now here you are in person. It's wild. It's crazy. You know what I mean?"
Great.
So it's just that's just you know like what the art
that's
our
wild.
Industry specifically. And so you know, yeah, I was wondering if there's. You know, more risk on buying an online business or not.
Same thing.
No, it just, and as long as the math and the fundamentals are the same.
Absolutely. And we have a component in our course. We actually have written a companion guide to buying an online business, which we include our materials, the process. There's peculiarities with every type of business versus, for example, if you're buying an online business, right? Or a company that primarily does its business online. Well, there's different considerations for that, not necessarily just from a brick and mortar business, but that has a life of its own. For example, in an online business, you have when you buy someone's business, you have a non-compete clause, and that restricts them for a certain period of time, for a certain geography, from going into competition with you. Because after all, I mean, you buy their business, you don't need them to become competitors the next day, especially in the online world. And when you buy a digital company or an online business, I mean, anybody could be anything that they want on the internet and can hide. And so you need to have a really robust mechanism to make sure that they're not going into business the next day. Because if they do, how do you find them? Right? I mean, they go under a pseudonym, they come up with a different website, and all of a sudden you just bought their business and they're back in business. And so because you can hide behind smoke, mirrors, and a brick wall, you talk brick and mortars, they can hide behind a brick wall and you to find out who they are. So there's strong mechanisms related to, you know, either keeping them on board or a strong seller note or big money held in escrow for a non-compete clause. And the non-compete portion, like you potentially could do business. Like in our business, we have clients in 86 countries. So if someone were to buy our business and want a non-compete, they need a non-compete from me that goes like, that's global. It doesn't cover like Broward County, Florida. It's global.
Right.
So those
right.
there's particular considerations for a digital business that are really actually quite unique.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And I think probably another risk would be making sure that the clients stay with the business that you're purchasing, because that's really the value of an online business is the recurring payments of the existing clients. And if the clients hear that the business owner that they know and love and trust is going somewhere else and they follow him, then the asset you just purchased kind of can pop. What are some of the biggest, I guess, you know, pitfalls in starting this? Because I think, you know, myself, you know, I've thought about starting and buying businesses as well. You know, my background is very much like growing the digital marketing agency and getting it off the ground. And so I'm very proficient in that. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of my listeners as well have considered purchasing a business, but they just, you know, they don't know what pitfalls lie ahead of them. So,
right.
You know, how do you make sure that you're not buying a bad business? Do you need a whole bunch of money in the bank in order to buy the business? Are you handing over tons of cash? Are you going to the bank and taking out a loan? What are the big challenges that you're going to face in this process when you're buying your very first business?
Okay, so let's divide that up because a couple of really good questions there. One being related to, you know, the pitfalls, and the other thing related to the financial.
Yeah,
let's go
pitfalls first, and then we'll talk about financing.
The financing, because that's really important, because there's a lot of misleading information that I would love to be able to address with you. So the pitfalls, you can mitigate most, if not all, of the risk, but not all of it. There is always going to be a little component of risk, and so the key is to be able to go through the examination of the business in a very methodical way and not relying on this concept of, for example, the due diligence being a short period of time and only a review of the financials. Every part of the business has to be examined. And you you know, part of entrepreneurship. You're probably going to make some mistakes. I mean, that's just the reality. Just don't make big ones.
Right. It's how you learn.
It's how you learn. And when you're during the act of, and it's how you get exactly, it's how you have your best learning. I mean, my best learning, certainly from failures, and also embracing this idea of being wrong. But we can get into a philosophical conversation. Let's go back to the original point, which is going through this methodically and flawlessly, allowing yourself enough time to go through all of the various pieces of the business and doing an investigation that's really flawless. I mean, even though I said you're going to make some mistakes, the overarching theme is you got to be flawless, because you want to investigate the financials, the competition, the industry, the sales and marketing, the contracts, the competition, the suppliers, the customers. I mean, there is really 11 different components that want to be investigated. We have a due diligence guide that has 200 points. Now, they don't all apply to every business, but you want to consider all of them. And so there are pitfalls that you're going to come across. It's inevitable. But the pitfalls are really come back to bite you in the ass if you don't examine them. So all of the things, as you go through the process, and you want to be, you don't want to take forever, but you do need to take your time and allow yourself enough time. Probably the biggest pitfall where people either make a mistake or not buy businesses, they don't understand due diligence starts the second a business is of interest to you. So as soon as you find a business online, you may have just sent in an inquiry or just had a 2-second conversation with a seller or their intermediary, or you got a response to your letter. The second that type of business is of interest to you, you have got to start your due diligence, understand the industry, doing some research, dissecting their financials, looking at the company's business plan, understanding their contracts immediately. And so the pitfalls, I don't see that. I mean, I see there's a ton of pitfalls if you don't do it properly.
Yeah.
If you do it properly, the pitfalls are going to be rare. I mean, that's really, and I don't mean to be dismissive or simplify it, but comes down to actually making this manageable, right?
Yeah.
And so the people that don't acquire the knowledge they need, or they don't get in tune with what type of business is right for them, or they get into the concept of endless searching or not knowing how to handle financials that aren't representative or not accurate, or uncooperative business brokers, they become overwhelmed and they end up aborting. And that's why 90% don't go through with a purchase. They abort the process. And it's only because the pitfalls that you asked about and they've encountered, they just didn't know how to deal with them. And it's not that hard. I mean, it's just complex. And so the platform, and we talked about it earlier, having the right knowledge, not generic nonsense information or misleading information. It's good knowledge. And, you know, the best way to go about this process, and I'm by no means is this is, you know, I'm not trying to be like an infomercial, because I don't care if anybody buys our program. It makes no difference to my financial situation whatsoever. I just like to help people. But if you want to do something, take on a new project, like Tyler, if you're buying a new business or an ancillary business, or decided that you wanted to go into expand your business into a certain category, you wanted to, in your digital marketing business, that you wanted to start going after insurance brokers. I'm just giving you some wild random example. Well, the best way to embark upon a new project is find someone who's already successful at it and just copy them. Even better yet, get them to mentor you. So go after good information of people that have already done it. And for a business individual looking to buy a business, that could be someone locally who's bought a business. Just people are generally happy to help you. So the pitfalls, I don't see that many pitfalls if you have your knowledge. I mean, they're there, but they're all manageable, and you can overcome all of them.
And you can see them in real time and you know,
exactly,
adjust for them.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the finances, because I see, you know, all over online, you know, buy a business with zero money, buy a $1 business, buy, you know, like there's all types of different stuff out there. So clear the record, you know, do you have to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank in order to buy a business? Should you have that? Is it something you finance with a lender? What's the best way to go at it?
So the first part of the equation, when you're alluding to what I call the self-anointed gurus, right?
Yeah.
If you're a guru, you don't have to tell anybody. Everybody knows. But the self-anointed gurus that tell you, I saw one recently, buy a $250,000 business with no money down and can close the deal in 4 hours. How's that? And so that actually, all that nonsense on social media has actually been a big motivating factor for me to get like ramp up, because I've been getting demands for podcasts and interviews for years, and I'm always very low key. So I'll give you the technical term for those concepts where you could buy a business for no money down, throwing off hundreds of thousands of dollars of profit and close the deal in 30 days with zero exposure. The technical term for that, and I think they use it at some of the university, but the technical term for that is complete bullshit. I mean, it's complete and utter bullshit. Okay.
Yeah.
And anybody, and I'm doing this for 34 years, and rest assured that if that's possible, I'd be doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible 1 out of 10,000? Of course, but it'll take you a decade to get to that business. So it is nonsense. Don't fall for it. And the crazier thing is people like charging thousands of dollars to do it. So, I mean, it actually makes my blood boil. So I don't want to just keep, going on to that subject, because I'm going to get really, really frustrated, because those people I'd like to see them all in jail, because it's nonsense. They're just stealing people's
money. Well, I'm
glad
I brought it up then, because there is a lot of that out there.
Oh, it's ridiculous. That's what I'm not a social media guy. We've been selling tons of courses over the years, low key, because we sell real world, practical experience, information that you could learn and put to use the next day. And I've always told people, you know what, if this is not for you, I'll give you your money back. And our guarantee is a lifetime guarantee, because I don't want to take anybody's money who, you know, it's very easy to have an information product with all these promises and they deliver nothing. So it is, and I pardon my French, it's complete and utter bullshit. And anybody, I hate this, I'd rather see someone not even buy a business and fall for that nonsense, because you'll be able to not be able to use any of that information. Now that I got that off my chest. Okay. So now let's talk about the money that's required. You need some capital. Now there's leverage that you can achieve, phenomenal leverage. And it varies. It varies from 100% in very, very rare cases, like doing an SBA loan. So if you're talking about some type of leverage, they have some criteria where you don't have to put up money, but you got to put up your life. You got to put up your house, and you got to collateralize the loan. So even though you maybe have a very small amount of money, you're putting up, it could potentially be a risk that you're not willing to take, your family, your spouse, your partner, whatever the case may be, you're just not comfortable with it. And so 91% of our clients get seller financing. It's the way I've been doing deals for decades. It's a component that's either representing part or all of the equation. It has varied between 30% to 90. Sometimes it's somewhere in between 30, 50, 60. It depends on the deal.
30% to 90% financed,
yes,
with 10% to 70% paid in cash.
Yeah. It depends on the seller and what you can negotiate. And there's been cases where I've paid someone more for their business than they are asking, because I got unbelievable seller note.
Wow.
I had one situation where I paid to someone. I mean, they were so hung up on selling their business for $1 million. I couldn't get past the valuation of $900,000. And I would like to tell you that I was pulling my hair out, but I don't have much left. I'm not like you, a nice thick head of hair, but realized it was just an ego thing. This guy wanted to sell his business and tell his buddies that he sold his business for $1 million. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I negotiated a deal with him. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll pay $1 million too, but I want 30 years to pay it off.
Oh,
and he agreed.
Wow.
And so to me, it's like, I'll pay your price, you take my terms. But when it comes to a seller note, it's very negotiable. But make no mistake, you need some capital. Like, you're not going to go buy $1 million business for no money down. It's just not going to happen. Chances are you have trouble buying a $50,000 business for no money down. Why would anybody sell you a good business for no money down when they can turn around and go put it online, and if it's a good business, and sell it and get a high percentage of cash or a seller note? Like, they're not going to sell it to you for no money down to a stranger with no track record and not take any collateral. So
now, how do you decide how much down is appropriate?
You negotiate. And so when you come in, I like to give people a barometer saying, you look at the business. Oftentimes they'll talk about seller financing, or they might put even in a listing a percentage down. I go as little as possible. But however, before you get to that, you're meeting with an owner. Tyler, you come to me and you tell me you're interested in buying my business. And we're having a conversation. I have a price in my mind of X amount of dollars, and I may have it on the market a little while and not moving like I was hoping, or the interest that I was hoping. And we start talking, having a conversation, and you come in, and Tyler number one comes in guns a-blazing for the $1 million business and say, I'll buy this business for $100,000. I want a $900,000. I'm going to say, look, who the hell are you? Right? Like, why would I do that? versus Tyler comes in and we have some generic conversations about the business and you're asking a lot of good questions and interesting questions. And the more we meet and the more we talk, the more I'm impressed with you. I'm not only impressed with you and your presentation and your ability to assemble questions, I'm really impressed with your ability to potentially run this business. And I say to myself, you know what? I know that my staff is going to get along great with Tyler. The other guy who came in sounds like a bit of an asshole. My employees are going to get pissed. So, and you start at every engagement between you and I, you impress me. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is the following, and I've seen it live. Okay. It's because it's happened to me representing a seller. You have a third meeting and after the meeting you leave and the seller and I say to my broker, you know what? That's the guy I want to buy my business. At that point, you just reel them in because the terms and conditions that they will be prepared to offer as a result of knowing that their business is going to be turned over to the right person, someone who cares, someone who's going to perpetuate their legacy, run the business with honor and sincerity and treat their employees well, is going to go way beyond to come up with a transaction that's going to be fair to you. And because the rules are, if the buyer and seller like and trust each other, and the buyer wants to buy, and the seller wants to sell, and I've seen this for decades, you cannot stop them from doing a deal. They will figure out a way, because it goes way beyond the numbers. Now, you come in there guns a-blazing, or like these ridiculous con artists selling these programs that you alluded to, guns a-blazing, I'll give you X, but I want 100%. Get out. Because you know what, people, shitty businesses, they might go to sell them on those kinds, but someone who has, you know, I deal in the real world. I breathe oxygen from this planet. What we just talked about are things that happen repeatedly when you do it the right way. And you need some money. So now that business at $1 million, you may have to put down $200,000 or $250,000. If you think you're buying it for zero, it doesn't happen. For those people that have no money, then what I encourage them to do is you either need to start saving up some money or you need to consider getting yourself in a position where you can go and work for a smaller business with the opportunity to buy in either through sweat equity or overtime. You're not going to put yourself in a good position without any capital. That's just the reality of it. If I could teach people how to buy business, if buying a business, good businesses for no money down was realistic, I'd have sold 100 million programs, not 100,000. It's just not real world. You just need, you need some capital. And there are SBA, you know, loans in America that are phenomenal. They could offer leverage of 9-to-1. You have to collateralize the loan or put up part of the collateral. The good thing is if you get approved and the business gets approved, it really goes a long way to say this is a really good business. But, and as long as you're comfortable with that risk, and I'm comfortable with that risk, but I've done it a number of times. Some first-time buyers may be a little uncomfortable, but if you can get comfortable with that, those are tremendous opportunities. You put up a dollar, you could buy a business for 10, or you put up less than a dollar and you get that unbelievable leverage. So that's a road that I would really encourage people to explore. And so there are a lot of avenues available for individuals. And even if you go down the road of the SBA loan, you still want some money for working capital. Some things they could provide it, but you do need some capital. I mean, you just don't need a lot, but you do need some.
Yeah. I think one major theme that we've kind of learned in this episode is there is so many different ways that a deal can be made and a deal can be, you know, negotiated so many different ways when you got financing, you have how much down, you have, you know, is it the right business for you? There's just so many things to consider. And I think that's why there's so much confusion out there in the marketplace. So someone that provides all this knowledge and has your experience, I think is really, really valuable. I do have one last question for you on this episode. And it's, you know, for really our audience, which is primarily digital marketing agency owners. What is one piece of advice that you can give to our listeners for setting up their agency to be attractive to a potential buyer down the road, right? Maybe we're not wanting to sell for another 10 years, but what's something we should start thinking about or doing now so that when the time comes, a buyer is going to be attracted to the business?
Okay. Well, Tyler, you know, based on an hour from now, I try to give a full expansive answer, but there are actually four, and I appreciate you asking the question. The first thing is you should run your business like you have to sell it. Now, that doesn't mean you're selling it, but keep in mind someone that at one point down the road, for the most part, someone's going to look to buy that business. So you want to run it from day one like you have to sell it. And if you look at it through the eyes of the buyer, encompasses the following. And I'll really squeeze these to three things. Okay. Number one, because they're the things that really cause buyers to just not buy, to turn away from your business. So number one, maintain flawless books and records and financials. Flawless, not good. Phenomenal. Okay. Because first of all, if you go back to the first point, if you run your business like you have to sell it, during the time that you're running it, you're going to have a better business. Number one, flawless books and records. And that means, so you have a handle on everything. You understand your margins, because when the time comes that you sell your business, you turn over your financials to someone to examine, you want them to be able to go through that in like a New York minute. The numbers match. Boom, boom, binary, like we talked about earlier. Over. That's number one. And it'll help you run your business better because you'll understand cash flow. And for those people that aren't comfortable with financial statements, you could learn. I didn't know how to read a financial statement when I bought my first business. But you learn. You can take a business accounting course. And it's pretty simple. And so, but you should learn. You have to learn that. That's number one. The second thing is what I call what keeps you up at night. Whatever keeps you up at night about a business, about your business. Imagine someone who doesn't have the know-how that you have or the understanding of your business. A buyer looks at it. What keeps you up at night of business is to the power of 10. That's going to be a concern for a buyer. Okay. So that could be customer concentration. It could be training of people. It could be recruiting of people. It could be gaining new customers, retain. Whatever keeps you up at night about the business, address. And even issues that may not seem that concerning to you, for example, customer concentration. Well, Tyler, you know, in digital money, you have a few good customers. You say, well, I'm not worried about it. Yeah, company X, Y, and Z and the other two, they represent 60% of business. But I know them for 20 years. They can't leave. A buyer looks at that and says, oh, shit, if those three leave, I'm out of business before I get into business. So figure out how to spread your client base and get more. So in other words, what keeps you up at night about a business is going to keep a buyer up at night and away from buying your business, because it's going to be, for you, it might be an incident, them, it's a catastrophe. So that's point number two. And point number three is understand the buyer pool. Think about this from a perspective of supply and demand. The more buyers that are interested in a business, the greater chance you're going to sell, and the higher the chance, probability that you're going to sell it at a higher price. So you want to increase the buyer pool. And how do you increase the buyer pool? Is by making your business able to transition to the greatest number of people possible. And how that can happen is by having great processes in place, systems and automation, so that the greatest number of people can come in and run and take over that business. Because unless you're doing $100 million, chances are, Tyler, you're going to get out of your nice leather chair when you sell the business, and someone else is going to put their ass in that leather chair, and they're going to be the new owner. So the easier that can transition to someone, and they can run that business, and the greater number of people that it could potentially transition to, the greater the probability of the valuation and the deal terms and even selling it all together. And that starts with having processes and procedures and systems in place so that the most of the business is as automated as possible and understandable. So to recap, the overarching theme is run it like you have to sell it. And then there's those three points, right? Of flawless books and records, what keeps you up, fix what keeps you up at night, and automate and systemize as many things as possible.
Yeah. And what I love about that is even if you don't sell, that's great business advice. That's going to help you run your business 100%. In much better shape anyways, regardless of if you're going to sell or not.
That's exactly
follow that advice either way.
it's 100% correct. That absolutely, because you may not sell it or it could be down the road, but your business will be better without question. Yes.
Without question, 100%. Richard, thank you so much for being on this episode. It could go another 3 hours. I have a ton more questions for you on this topic because it's just so good. Can you let our listeners know how they can find you and sure. your course?
So first of all, thank you. And if you don't get tired of my old man face too much, I'm happy to come back at any time. If there's your Great. Listeners have any specific subjects, I love this subject matter and happy to talk about it and help anybody in any way I can. So my main website, there's a couple of them. My main website is richardparker.com. I have there's lots of free articles, free reports, all kinds of information related to buying businesses. And so it's very interesting for people if they just want to get, accurate information about how to go about this process. And on there, there's a link on top related to courses and to our main guide, how to buy a good business at a great price, which takes you to our subsite where you can place your order. But again, it's richardparker.com. And also I want to extend to your listeners, if anybody has any particular questions that they want to ask me, just use our contact page and just mark on there to please have them forward it to me directly. I'm never giving them a sales pitch for our program. I'm happy to answer questions. And so if there's something that they're wrestling with or need some help with, please. I mean, I love this shit. I do this all day long and I really enjoy the conversation. So please, I encourage anybody to reach out and I'm happy to spend some time with them.
Perfect. Perfect. I know I did, and I'm sure our listeners also enjoyed the conversation. So again, thank you so much for joining us on this episode.
Thank you again for having me, Tyler.
That's going to be it for today's episode. If you're ready to take your marketing agency or B2B business to the next level and have your leads, your sales, and your client fulfillment all done 100% for you, then apply now at www.profitpeak.co. That's www.profitpeak.co. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. See you on the next episode of the Profit Playbook Podcast.